They were embracing this American dream. They had great pride within their community and great hopes for their children.
Black Americans established their own town in Texas after emancipation. Racism destroyed it. Part one of Quakertown, a Juneteenth labor and migration story, is next on A Third of Your Life.
You spend a third of your life at work. We're all about making it better. This is the Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations podcast.
Quakertown was a thriving community established by formerly enslaved Black Americans in Denton, Texas in the late 1800s. But as it grew and prospered, Quakertown became a target. Welcome to A Third of Your Life. I'm Steve Flemish, and our guest host is Danielle Phillips Cunningham, an associate professor in the Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations. Danielle is studying the history of Quakertown, and in this special two-part episode, she's talking with two native Texans who are working to preserve that history, Alma Clark and Diane Randolph. Now, on A Third of Your Life, Danielle Phillips Cunningham.
I'd like to begin our conversation today with a brief explanation of how and why Juneteenth is now recognized as a national federal holiday. Black people in Texas have always understood the importance of Juneteenth, but people across the country and the world are still learning about its significance. Then I will introduce listeners to our guest speakers today, Diane Randolph and Alma Clark. I will also explain how we began working with each other to preserve the history of Quakertown and how we will approach our conversation today. And then we will delve deeply into the history of Quakertown. So in 2021, President Joe Biden signed the Juneteenth National Independence Day into law to recognize the emancipation of enslaved Black people in Texas on June 19, 1865, which was 2 years after Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation in 1863. And so Juneteenth has been celebrated by Black Texans for over 150 years. President Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris were inspired to make Juneteenth a federal holiday after several community leaders and activists from Texas insisted that the nation recognize the delayed emancipation of Black people in Texas. So this new holiday has rightly shined a light on the resilience and resistance of African Americans in the face of over 400 years of enslavement. And so the title of this podcast episode is Quakertown, a Juneteenth labor and migration story, because the nation, again, is still learning about Juneteenth and the lives of Black Texans after emancipation, especially within the context of labor and migration. Those topics as it pertains to Juneteenth are rarely discussed, and we are going to discuss those topics today. Quakertown was a socially vibrant and economically prosperous community established by formerly enslaved Black Americans in Denton, Texas in the late 1800s. And in 1921, the city of Denton passed a bond vote that demolished the community that provided many Black Americans with working and living opportunities that were denied to them during slavery. So I have the distinct pleasure of being joined today by Alma Clark and Diane Randolph. And I consider them my friends, and I consider them model examples of how women can live full, active, and intellectually curious lives as they work to preserve histories that have been silenced in our schools and in public discourse. They are native and proud Texans and community leaders who have been leading efforts in Denton to preserve the history of Quakertown for several years, Their efforts are especially important during this critical time when Black history is being taken out of the history books in Texas and in other states across the country. Alma Clark, I refer to her as a walking Quaker Town archive. She represents a large body of oral histories and knowledge about the people of Quaker Town. She is a young 96 years old, and I truly mean that because her social calendar is busier than mine will ever be. In fact, I think Ms. Clark and Ms. Randolph are headed to a meeting, right, later this afternoon. See, she's nodding her head. Both of them are nodding their heads. So they have really full and active lives. Ms. Clark always insists that I not read her full bio, but I am going to take the time to do it anyway because she has accomplished so much. Alma was born in Lampasas, Texas, and in 1958, she married Reverend Willie Clark, who lived in Quaker Town from when he was a child until he became a young adult. Alma has an extensive record of service to the Denton community. She served as voter elections clerk for Denton County for over 40 years, and she served on the Denton County RSVP Advisory Board and the Denton County African American Museum Advisory Board. She was elected president of the local Denton chapter of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People for 4 years, and she currently serves as a volunteer at the Denton American Legion Senior Center. She is also the tour guide of the African American Museum for the Denton County and Cultural Society. And I just want to pause here quickly and say that the actual physical structure of the museum would not have been possible without Alma. Alma has been an active member of the St. James AME Church for over 55 years. And St. James was one of the original churches of Quaker Town. She has served as the past president for the Denton County Christian Women's Association and worship leader for the North Texas Conference of the AME Church Women's Missionary Society. She currently serves as the superintendent of Sunday School, president of the Taylor Clark Women's Missionary Society, and stewardess and choir member of the St. James AME Church. She teaches Tuesday morning Bible study at the Lakey Street American Legion Senior Center for the Mount Pilgrim CME Church Senior Missionary Society. She also serves as worship leader for the Denton County African American Cancer Support Group, and she has received numerous honors, including the Community Spirit of Excellence Award from People's Funeral Home, and in 2016, President Barack Obama awarded her the Lifetime Achievement Award for building a stronger nation through volunteer service. So listeners, as you can tell, I was not exaggerating when I said that Alma is very active and that she is a pillar of her community. So is Diane Randolph, who is an alumna of Texas Woman's University. She has been at the forefront of pushing the university to acknowledge their role in the demolition of Quaker Town, and she has led efforts to honor Quaker Town descendants through a memorial that is currently under construction on the university's campus. And this is a huge deal because for decades, the university did not want to even discuss its role in the passage of the law that destroyed Quaker Town. When I taught there, it was really like a taboo subject that didn't want to be discussed. And so Diane is changing that. She earned her bachelor's and master's degrees from Texas Woman's University. She is also an artist, educator, and activist, a classically trained soprano. She has performed throughout Europe and the United States, exploring the rich musical styles of African-American and European classical traditions. Equally at ease and proficient in performing African-American spirituals, operas, and oratorios, she endeavors to not only share her gifts theatrically, but also to engage others as an educator and mentor. Diane is featured as a teaching artist in the PBS film Blacks in Opera, Ada and Her Sisters and Brothers. She has served on music faculties in New York City schools, the Harlem School of the Arts, National Summer Music Institutes, and chaired a New York State Music Association committee. Diane has created and implemented numerous presentations, lectures, and workshops on the rich, varying components of vocal music. As a member of several professional music organizations, Diane is a recipient of many honors for singing, teaching, and mentoring young artists. Diane serves on the Texas Woman's University Foundation, the TWU Quakertown Memorial Committee, and she is the founder of Texas Woman's University's Black Alumni Association. It was under her leadership of that committee, along with Ann Scott, alumni director, that the 50th year celebration of racial integration at Texas Woman's University, honoring the first graduates, was accomplished. Diane continues to be active in the Denton community through church and nonprofit organizations. In addition to being a motivational speaker, she continues to perform in concerts and recitals. And so I met Alma and Diane over 3 years ago when I was a co-principal investigator of the National Endowment for the Humanities grant project to integrate the history of Quakertown into courses across academic disciplines at Texas Woman's University. And so the grant team consisted of four people, but I was the only Black faculty member on the grant team. And I really wanted to connect with other Black people in the community who truly understood the richness of Quakertown's history and who respected the people who lived in Quakertown and their descendants. So I felt a personal connection to the history of Quakertown, especially as someone who grew up between Atlanta, Georgia, and Detroit, Michigan, which are two cities where Black people are in political and economic positions of power. So this story about an independent Black town really spoke to me. So I reached out to Diane, who graciously offered her time to the project. And then she introduced me to Alma, who I interviewed for the project. And the rest is history, because Diane and Alma have not been able to get rid of me since. And we continue to work with each other on preserving the history. So moving on to our discussion today, I just want to give a brief framing of how we will approach the history of Quakertown. Considering that our conversation will center the lives of people who were not considered human beings by law, who were excluded from labor unions, and who were subjected to the most brutal and exploitative labor system in the history of the U.S., we will take a comprehensive approach to discussing the history of people in Quakertown. So honoring the hard and important work that they did to sustain themselves and their families means fully recognizing who they were as people, both within and outside of their workplaces. So some of the overarching questions that will frame our discussion are, how did formerly enslaved Black people in Texas create lives and communities for themselves after Juneteenth? And how was migration central to Black people's lives after Juneteenth? So without further ado, let's dive into Quakertown's history. And so I'd like to begin with some basic questions about Quakertown, since I assume many of our listeners might not have heard about Quakertown. So Alma and Diane, what was Quakertown? How did it get started? And how was it established? And I'd like to begin with you first, Alma.
It was established in 1875. At first it was called Freedman's Town, and it was located in a different area. But as it began to grow in population, and many of the people that had to work found out that some property came available that was closer to the work area,
they uprooted themselves in about 1890 and established a town that they called Quakertown. The reason why it was called Quakertown, it is because during slavery, the Quakers had a great hand in helping the Black people with their migrations to other places. Therefore, in 1890, they moved from the Freedmantown location to a place called Quakertown, which was close to the downtown area of the city of Denton. And it was actually a town. It had a population of almost 1,000 people. It had its own grocery store, churches, school, cafes, lodges, their own doctor. So it was a very prosperous town. They was a self-sustaining community.
Diane, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, Ms. Clark has this incredible, like listening to an encyclopedia this morning of all of this information that she has. I have to just add that part of the role of the Quakers, who particularly were working with Native Americans during that time, and also noted abolitionists, but these people perhaps thought that that would be a suitable name for their town because of the status of those people. Quaker was rich in the talents of the people within the community and this ability to take care of themselves with the various jobs that they had. Some were highly skilled. She mentioned the doctor, but there was also the midwife who delivered babies of not only the African Americans, but some of the whites, is my understanding as well. And there were beauticians, people had various shops, all of the things that you would expect a community to have. And back then, there even was the need for a wood shop, people who would have collect the wood and have wood delivered to you and for the community. So they really were contributing members within the community.
Both of you have really given us a lot, and I'd like to dig deeper into some of those details, because as you mentioned, Quakertown was a town within a city. It was self-sustaining, independent. So just to add to the details of this town, could you share with us some of the names of those cafes, some of the names of the shops, and what those businesses were like and what they meant to people at the time? So we can begin first with you, Alma.
There was at least three cafes that they had, and I think the most popular one was called the Buffalo Cafe, and it was ran by a family named Goodall. I can give you the names of some of the families that was there. The doctor's name was Moten, and the midwife was named Angelina Burr. Not only where she's a midwife, but she was also considered the first Black woman to own property in Quakertown. And it is told that she was a force to be reckoned with. They had a funeral home. They also had a drugstore. They had a tailor shop. They had barber shops and beauty shops. Many of the homes and many of the buildings served as a dual purpose. Some of the homes that would be a cafe also would be a home. The Quakertown house that we have in the city of Denton, in the park there, the front room of the house was established and it was known as a barber shop. There was gardeners that they also had. They had churches and leading parts, also a school and teachers. I'm told that the teachers had attended, most of them, Prairie View College, which was an all-Black college in Texas. But they taught and they only received $30 per month for teaching. And the names of some of those teachers was Maggie Hampton and Ella Washington. The principal of the school was Bale. And they also had a drugstore, which was ran by a person by the name of Bale. There was no relation. They just happened to have the same last name. Reynolds was some of the people that were there. Skinner was the man that had the shop that would work on harnesses and do the leather work. They also had a person there that had, as she stated, the wood yard, which was given by the Logans. And then there were the Lodges. They were played a very important role in the life of the people in Quakertown. They were well respected. The buildings served as a dual purpose. It may be a large hall where they met and would have a lot of their community gatherings at large halls. Twice a month, a moving picture show would come and they would attend the moving picture show at the large halls.
And Ms. Clark, would you also tell us a bit about your husband's family and your husband and how they came to Quakertown?
My husband and his family was born in a town called Argyle, which is just a short distance from Quakertown. But when he got old enough to attend school, his mother moved into Quakertown. His father had passed when he was 3 years old, so she remarried a fellow by the name of Ross Henry. And there in Quakertown, they had a large house, and she ran a cafe for a short while. She was known to be an excellent cook. Ross Henry worked downtown doing mediocre work. He was one of the founding members of the St. James AME Church. My husband attended school, the Frederick Douglass School is what it was called at that time. And the reason why it was named that, it was given the name of the abolitionist Frederick Douglass. And he attended the school there. He was blessed to graduate, and then he did spend 2 years at Preview College.
Well, thank you, Ms. Clark. Diane, would you like to add anything about the vibrancy of Quakertown?
I have to say that as I listen to Mrs. Clark, it is so clear to me about these people migrating basically from various parts of not only the South and within this smaller community around Denton, but it is a look at African Americans trying to find a life and trying to live a life with the full promises of citizenship that is in the Constitution, but also that they thought they could find after having been enslaved. And some of the people who formed this town, started this community, in fact, came from southern states in which they were trying to get away from being pressed into staying on plantations where they would work for nothing or next to nothing. That's an element of what was happening here as you look at these people establishing this vibrant community and really trying to make a life from themselves. Some of the states that I saw from a census list were Louisiana, Alabama, Arkansas, Mississippi, and Kentucky. People looking for some happiness for themselves and their families and a full life. And this is in the middle of an historical time in the United States that we are seeing about to shape here, you know, just prior to that great migration.
Thank you so much to both of you for mentioning the importance of the Frederick Douglass School, which connects to the points that you raised, Ms. Randolph, about migration, right? So people were moving to Quakertown from other cities and towns across the state of Texas, as well as from other states, because of the Frederick Douglass School. That was just so important. And education, formerly enslaved Black people saw as intricately connected to better jobs, right? And labor independence. Education was that pathway. And so there were continued challenges even after emancipation. Many cities and rural towns didn't invest in schools for Black children and Black adults as well. So when schools were made, especially like the Frederick Douglass School of Quakertown, people were hungry for that education for themselves and their children and migrated from all over. So I'd like to ask you if you elaborate on the importance of the Frederick Douglass School to the community of Quakertown and Black people who moved there. What did it mean to them?
I would like to comment, speaking of people migrating from other states, one of the most prominent person that was often spoke of was a fellow by the name of Henry Taylor. He was living in Decatur. And when he found that Denton had a school with his wife, Mary Ellen, and his five children, he moved to Quakertown. He was a cowboy and a farmer. But when he left Decatur and came to Denton, he had to seek other work. So therefore, he became what we call a gardener. He would take his old horse and wagon and go and do the yards for the people. And he had a beautiful yard. They said that the cuttings and things that he would take from the yards that he worked, he would bring it to his house in Quakertown. His yard was the most beautiful yard that was in Quakertown. His wife was named Mary Ellen, and she was part Indian. She took in laundry. And the story is told that after Quakertown was no longer and they had to relocate, that Mary Ellen was very particular about her house and the contents of her house. So when the house had to be moved with the team of mules from the Quakertown area to the location that they had purchased, Mary Ellen sat in her house in her rocking chair as they moved it. Mind you now, there was no paved streets. It was dirt roads, mighty few automobiles when this occurred in the early 1900s. There is a book out, and it makes mention about Henry Taylor, the white lilac that he had. Therefore, as you said, many of the people came from other states because of the school. So Quakertown played a very important role, not only for the residents of the city of Denton, but it also helped improve the lives of other people that did not, especially Blacks, that did not have an opportunity to have the type of education that was provided for them in the Quakertown at the Fred Douglass School.
And when you mentioned that he was a gardener, Ms. Clark, that also made me think about the opportunities for advancement that Quakertown presented, because as you mentioned, before Henry Taylor migrated to Quakertown, he was a farmer. And most Black people after emancipation, as we know, had few options but to work as sharecroppers. And sharecropping was incredibly hard. Black families, usually Black men, women, and children, worked on farms owned by former slaveholders and were kept in perpetual debt. So to have the opportunity to work as a gardener was a difference, right, from sharecropping. And I think also highlights his particular skills and knowledge that he had with the land and with the soil, right? that Black people at the time, especially in sharecropping, who didn't have those options, would be exploited, right, for their knowledge about how to grow things, how to grow crops, and how to grow flowers. And it's my understanding that in Texas, it's hard to grow white lilacs. Yeah, the fact that he could grow white lilacs speaks to who he was as a skilled worker and a skilled agriculturalist. And I'm glad that you brought up his wife, Mary Ellen Taylor, because when teaching the history about Quakertown, all of my students, they love the fact that she refused to leave her house. But Ms. Randolph, I'd like to bring you into this about, you know, the importance of schools and teachers to Black communities at this time.
Well, about the white lilacs, the skill that it takes to grow this particular plant in this area of Texas. You need a certain kind of soil and you need a certain amount of shade and the right mixture of shade and sunshine. If you don't have that, you don't have success. So you don't see white lilacs around here. Really rare. So a highly skilled gardener. Great craft. Now your question, you know, I'm particularly interested in the Moore family. Fred Moore's father had been a janitor. And through the school and the education there, and he was one of the first, probably the first Black janitor at the University at North Texas. What has happened here is that they are able to be able to make a living to eventually their son gets to go to college and becomes an educator in that very school, which is later named after him. But people were able to go further in their lives and to see more of their aspirations come true. The school is extremely important. I see that even Latin was taught there. The highly educated group of people in terms of academics was developing within Denton, Texas, whether it was in the arts in particular, with music, which was so important in the school. Literature, the teaching of history, was just a wonderful look at how far they had come and were expecting to go as they built lives for their families and their communities.
So people did a range of jobs during a time when most Black people had few options but to work as sharecroppers or domestic workers. And so, as you all have mentioned, people worked as teachers, as principals, as owners and managers of their own businesses, from the wood yards, the grocery stores, the cafes. I even read that there was an ice cream shop too in Quakertown. And there was just so much. Alice Skinner, Ms. Clark mentioned her husband earlier. I believe Alice Skinner operated her own daycare in their home, right? They had all these businesses. And some people, as Ms. Randolph mentioned, worked at the local colleges. So the university, what's known as the University of North Texas, and also at Texas Woman's University. So all in all, what do you think it meant for people to call Quakertown home during this time, given that they had these expanded educational and job opportunities? What did it mean to call Quakertown home?
They were living in a place where they saw themselves being able to grow, to improve their lives, to see their children have better lives, to see and a hope for some level of safety in their lives. I think they were trying to really see that they were embracing this American dream. They had great pride within their community and great hopes for their children. They were having a life, and the extended family has always meant so much within, I think, the Black community, where people often did not go that far from families. So I think that they were quite comfortable there and quite proud I understand that the streets, many of the streets, you would see these picket fences around the homes, lovely homes, and along some land of this creek, which really was along a floodplain. They had made a life within this area. So they were flourishing.
They were very proud people, everyone helping everyone. Some were not able to get jobs as others, and they would consider themselves day laborers, but oftentimes they didn't make sufficient funds. But those that had gardeners and chickens and other things, they would see that everybody had food and clothing, especially the necessities of life. If by chance that one person had a garden and became ill and wasn't able to harvest the garden, because a lot of them grew a lot of vegetables that they were able to sell, that was their livelihood, the community would come together and harvest that crop. They had horses and cows and hogs and chickens, so they were able to sustain themselves as far as food was concerned. Those that had skills in maybe cooking or sewing, then they would help others, and they could take old dresses, old materials and things, and a lot of hand-me-down clothes that was given to them, and they were skillful enough to take those clothes and remake them into a complete and a new garment, and you wouldn't recognize. And they would often take the old garments that couldn't do anything with and make quilts that keep them warm, and they would share it with the other people. They also was able to establish what they would call recreations. They would have dances, carnivals. They had musicians that would come that was there. Miss Bell was one of them, the Burr sisters. And then they were able to entertain themselves with games that they would play, like croquettes and pitching horseshoes, checkers. A lot of them even made some of the games that they would use. So they were very skillful people. They could take little of nothing and make a great deal of it.
We can see that they also are trying to build wealth for themselves and their families, leave something for their children. Miss Clark would probably know the name of this particular family, but they owned several houses, smaller homes that were actually rent houses for them to be able to live a little better, but also leaving something for their children. They had hopes and dreams for a future for their children in that place.
Yeah, and that's so important, because a term that's used a lot now is generational wealth, Black generational wealth. And through the story of Quakertown, we can see how formerly enslaved Black people were thinking about that from the very beginning, you know, especially after emancipation and the steps they were taking to create that generational wealth for their descendants and for their future grandchildren and great-grandchildren. I also appreciate you mentioning the economically diverse population of Quakertown. As you said, there were some people who could not work for themselves and who worked for low wages, but the support of the community, right, kept their households intact. And so they got a lot more, right, from the community, the social resources, pulling resources together to support your neighbors and other folk in the community that sustained them.
They actually formed organizations to help the community.
Yes.
Those lodges did that. The Eastern Stars, these are things outside of the church itself, was set up to help the community.
In part two of this episode, the community rallies after a devastating blow.
The school was set on fire in 1913.
And a controversial bond vote wipes Quakertown off the map.
Thanks for listening to A Third of Your Life, the Rutgers School of Management and Labor Relations podcast. For more information on our academic programs, faculty, and research, visit smlr.rutgers.edu.